Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Having a miserable week? Well, hang in there, because we are back with your favorite Avatar The Last Airbender rewatch podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Zach Muhammad, and as always, I'm joined by Jacob Redman. But we are not alone today. Today we have a great guest on from the Temptation Island Rewatch podcast, as well as some of the Survivor ranking recap shows. You are on Gabon as well. Please welcome in Maggie Morgan. Maggie, how are you doing this fine morning?
Hi guys, I'm doing awesome. Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
Nice. You got any haikus fire already lined up?
I'm so pumped up for the recap of the century. It is awesome. Is
there
that
we
it?
Go.
Was that good? Yeah, I feel like you're supposed to do line, like you're supposed to encapsulate your words within each line. Like, I don't think that it can just flow for like a full, you know, like 17 syllables, but I played around with it a little bit.
Nice. No, that was dope. Yeah, because we got a lot of questions saying like, oh, do you guys have any haikus ready? And unfortunately, I had a busy weekend, if I'm being honest. I did not come prepared with haikus. Maybe I'll
if I had known. One. Yeah, if I had known, I would have written out a couple.
Yeah.
We got asked to do so many haikus. Like, that was like half of people were just like, hey, can you write haikus? And I'm like, they're really hard. I sat here this morning and I came up with one. It was the intro of the show. So, hey, good morning, Zach. I'm glad to be here with you. Haikus are quite hard. I think that works.
But yeah,
I think that's about all I got.
I'm always like counting the syllables because I'm like Sokka. I know I'll eventually get like one with like six syllables in the last one or like yeah. up somehow.
I mean, obviously this is an audio only podcast, but if you had been able to watch me, everybody, I was literally counting with my fingers. So that was where I was at.
Yeah, that's just what you have to do. I like people that can just do this like offhand are very impressive. We're asked to do this in like, I think it was junior year of high school, like write haikus, and there are some people who could just do it like naturally, and I was like, you are gifted. But that
for was- sure that's not my gift.
<Me either. laughs> Nope. That's not my gift at all.
Yeah, I think if you're only good at talking in 17 syllable increments, you're probably not a great podcaster. You probably have to talk for like tons of words.
What a roundabout way of complimenting me, and I appreciate it. Thanks, Jacob.
Anytime. But yeah, we're here to talk about one of the best episodes. Like, I am so excited. This is Tales of Ba Sing Se. Like, this is why you do an Avatar rewatch podcast. So that's exciting.
I when I got on before we started recording, I was like, when you guys said that this was the one I was going to do, I was like, how did I get so lucky? Like, this is the best episode of Avatar ever. I have so much to say about it, like artistically and all of the different choices that they make, all the foreshadowing, all like even the arrangements of the different vignettes. I like really want to get into and discuss with you guys because I had forgotten that Momo's was last. And I even think that that was such a strong artistic choice. I can't wait to talk about it and get into all of it.
Yeah. So how did you get into Avatar to begin with? What's your Avatar origin story?
I watched when it was on live when I was like 10, you know, or I guess 12. I saw today was 2007, but yeah, I watched it with my brothers. They were both super into it. I have an older and a younger brother. We're all 2 years apart, and my dad really liked it too. So we would all watch it together. And like a lot of our inside jokes were about Avatar. Like my little brother and I still sometimes will text each other just secret tunnel in capital letters. But yeah,
Jacob's favorite.
It's hilarious. It's the funniest moment in any cartoon, I think, from my childhood. But yeah, so I was really into it when I was young. And then when it came back on Netflix, like, I had always remembered that I loved it. I've never watched Legend of Korra. I think just because I didn't want to spoil the sanctity of Avatar, and I was worried I wouldn't like Korra. And I mean, I've heard from everyone it's good, but I still have been like, I want to keep Avatar what it is. But yes. And then when it came on Netflix, I was working as a nanny for some kids, and I wanted to show it to them, and they were still like a little too young. They were like six, so they were sort of like, what is this? Not crazy into it. Like, they were still into Ninjago. Oh, and I was like, Avatar might be a bit too complex for them. But then when we watched the first couple episodes together, and then I finished it on Netflix. I rewatched the whole series last year. So awesome. I rewatched it in like 3 days.
Yeah, it's very bingeable. It's like hard to watch it week by week, because I'm just like, all right, I've watched this. Like, I wanted to finish season two so bad yesterday. And I was like, no, I can't. I'm going to do this right.
But yeah, I'm in the same boat as you, Jacob. I'm always fighting the urge not to watch like 10 episodes ahead, because I want to do it right and like watch it week by week. But it's like, it's so hard. It's so good. Now we're in such a good part of the show, too. I just want to go watch Appa's Lost Days, Lake Loud. I want to watch like all of them.
Yeah. Yeah. And I feel like we were like the perfect age when Avatar was like starting, because like, you're right. Like, if you try to show it to like a 5 year old, like, there's not enough fighting for it to like captivate every single time.
And it's not basic enough, you know, like, you need some level of like basic storytelling for really young kids to follow along. Like, it's obviously very complex and artistic. And even like this episode, I think that most young kids would be like, what's happening here? Like, why? Like, because nothing really happens in this episode, but everything happens in this episode. Yep. You know, so it's very, I really love how they sort of play with form with the storytelling in general. And for a really young kid, I think, to sit through something like that, it's like, wait, I want to watch Aang and the crew fight a bad guy, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Which is great too. Like, whenever that happens, I'm like, go get it. But yeah,
those season finales, each one of them really better than the next, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then what type of bender would you be if you were a bender?
A waterbender, for sure. Okay. I mean, I'm not to like, I don't know how much people believe in astrology. I'm sort of back and forth. But my every single placement in my chart is water. I would be a waterbender for sure. I also really identify with Katara. I know it's like so funny, because I feel like as adults, a lot of men especially are like, Katara sucks. Like, Katara's rude and Katara's bossy and people don't like Katara, but I am Katara. So whenever I hear that like discourse, I'm always like, wow, everybody needs to stop hating on her.
I feel like Jacob and I have had the opposite, where we've come to appreciate Katara more on our rewatch, especially season one. I think is really good to Katara showcase, especially like her fight with Paku. I thought was amazing. One of the best fights of the series. So I've come to become a bigger Katara fan, actually. Honestly, I was a little lower on Sokka, actually.
Yeah.
after rewatching season one, I came out a little less on Sokka and a little higher on Katara.
It would make sense that like, as young people, like between the ages of like 11 and 15, you would like the funny, goofy, lighthearted guy. And then like as adults, you're like, oh no, well, the sister is the one who, Katara holds it all together. She's the only reason that anything happens.
Yes. Yes. There are so many times where it's like, without Katara, they're just done. Like,
no more Aang.
Like in the desert a couple of weeks ago, if Katara doesn't lead them out of there with like moody, sad Aang, then they're just dead. So
they're
100%.
Totally.
I agree. Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, that's the kind of reflection that you come here for. You know, we don't just love the Sokka stuff because that's what we thought of that's what we liked when we were kids. But
Still love Sokka, though. I mean, I just love them all so much. They felt like my friends, you know, growing up. If anything, I felt least connected to Aang, just because, like, a kid from the Midwest was like not going to really understand meditating and like being whole and one with the earth. I was like, what's happening here? Like, I identify with Sokka like yelling boomerang before he throws it. You know?
Like, it's a simple pleasures. It's not the like esoteric things. Yeah,
exactly. I was like, what do you mean? Like, enlightenment, what is that, you know?
I'm super excited to get into it. I think we should jump right into this. This episode's pretty cool. It has like different vignettes of different stories, so we're gonna start off with the tale of Toph and Katara. This one's fun. Like, this is a pair we don't really see that often. And I think like in season three, there's even a joke where Katara goes on adventures with each member of the gang, and Toph's like, oh, are you going to go on an adventure with me? And she kind of does here. So that's nice. Like that they have this sort of adventure they get to go on together.
Yeah. I really love that all of these different vignettes, just from a storytelling perspective, I love that all of these different vignettes are very independent of one another. Like, the Aang story, you don't see any of the other people. Sokka's story, you don't see anyone else. And I love that they decided to put together Katara and Toph for this, that their story, you know, up to this point has been obviously very rocky. And it's like, this is what, because obviously these little vignettes are sort of what everybody needs at this point in their journey that they're on. And I think that it's really lovely that we get to see Katara and Toph really sort of their relationship blossoming and watching them sort of give one another what they need. You know, like Toph bends a little bit to what Katara wants to do, and Katara really sort of helps Toph regain confidence through all of this. And I think it's lovely.
Yeah. Yeah. It is really sweet because like they've been at each other's throats. I think that they're like so naturally opposed in like their personalities. Like Toph's so laid back. Like, she's like used to having things taken care of her, and Katara's like always had to be the one to do things. And so like to have them come together and have this moment is really sweet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The juxtaposition between these two characters is really beautiful, especially in this little vignette right here.
Yeah. But it starts off pretty funny. They're all like getting ready for the day, and you know, Aang's shaving his head, Sokka's shaving his little mustache. I would love to see like full mustache Sokka, like 2021, like he's grown the whole thing out. He's like drinking some like obscure beer. Like, I think that would fit with his man bun.
You just want hipster Sokka? Oh, yep. I don't want that.
I think that that's the best that his mustache is ever going to get. You know, I mean, I never watched Korra. I'm sure that he has a full, beautiful beard there. But like, I think that what you saw, those like four little dots on the top of his lip, is what he would look like at the bar in Bushwick. I think that that's what we're working with here.
Yeah, that's all he got.
Yeah. All right. So maybe he's good to cut it off there. Yeah, but then like, predictably, we see Toph. Toph's just like a complete mess. And so Katara says they're going to go to Fancy Lady Day Spa. Is that just a terrible name for a spa? It just sounds, I don't know. It sounds so fake. Like, I would not trust an establishment called Fancy Lady Day.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like a legitimate business. It sounds like a money laundering front. That's what it sounds like.
Honestly. And maybe that's just what spas are called. But like, I don't know.
I think it was the writers trying to be as clear cut as possible about what is happening. That Katara is dragging Toph to a place called Lady Day Spa.
Yes.
That's fair.
And I'm sure this is what the upper ring one is called. Like, I'm sure in the lower ring of Ba Sing Se, it's called like Dirty Lady Day. And it's like, no one's going. It's like, nah, not worth it. Yeah, but then when they get to the spa, it's pretty funny because, like, you know, everyone's trying to take it seriously, and Toph's just kind of joking around. Like, at first she says, like, don't touch my feet. And then I guess they force her to have a foot massage, which, like, really must be bad because she walks around on those feet all day. And then in the mud bath, she's making, like, weird snail or alien faces. She's having a blast. This is how you ought to have a spa day.
Well, what I really loved about this is that she was having a blast, but Katara was laughing along with her. Like, she was being a complete goof, and Katara wasn't like, Toph, like, be polite, like I would have usually expected. Like, she was just laughing along with her. They were just messing around, really sort of taking the time to be together. Katara, like I said, they were each really giving a little to one another, which I loved to see.
See, yeah. Maggie is such amazing analysis here. Whereas one of my only notes is like, remember when she's getting her feet rubbed and then she like earth bends that poor lady out of the building. What I was thinking is like, that lady must have been concussed, right? something must have gone, like, she got earthbent pretty far, and I assume she's a non-bender just from touch and toss.
So yeah. Zach, you're worried if she has to go on like the spa DL. You're like, is she injured? Exactly. Like,
does she need like injury reserve? She needs a couple of weeks off.
Yeah, I think Maggie, you make a great point that it's like Katara's inaction that like has her character go along. Mm-hmm. I did not notice this, but you're totally right. Like, usually she would be the one to speak up, and because it's inaction, I didn't like register it as exceptional. But you're totally right. Like, usually, I guess she would say like, "Hey, like, be respectful. Don't do that." So it is nice to see her lay back. Do either of you like going to the spa? Is that something that you like to do?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Go ahead, Zach.
No, I was going to say if I had money, I would go more often. But I like it. I like getting a mani-pedi and all that stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. If I was a kajillionaire, I would be there every day.
Yeah, exactly.
If I was married to Jeff Bezos, I would live at the spa.
Perfect. I like a spa, too. I feel like it is hyped up a lot and it is really nice, but then like you get there and it's just like, I don't know. It was a lot of sitting, which I guess is relaxing, but I always thought that it would be more active before I like ever went. But a mani-pedi is just like sitting there for a long time.
Active in wait, hold on. You need to explain this. Like, active in what way?
I just assume there would be like more things happening. Like, because whenever you like see a spa on like TV or film or whatever, it's just like you're not like seeing the people that are like working on your feet or hands. Like, you're usually like with the characters and like they just kind of like sit there and they're like doing something. I just assume that it would be more like this, where like you have to have three people constraining you, one person like scrubbing down your feet.
Yeah,
that's what I thought it would be.
I guess that's like all of the early 2000s like TV and films. They're all like, anytime you see a spa, they're like, have a mud mask on and cucumbers over their eyes, which I have never, ever done anything like that. So I don't know what spas these people were going to, but yeah, they're not mine.
I also think it's funny when like Toph is getting her like feet. It's also the way that she sees. So in some ways, her getting a foot massage is kind of like LASIK surgery. Like, she's able to see better. I thought that was very funny that like it's like effectively her glasses.
I didn't think about that.
Yeah, me neither. Good observation, Jacob.
Well, I'm not sure it's good or just odd, but I'll take we also see that they go into the sauna, and when they're going in, like they're able to earth and water bend together to like make the steam, and that's luxury right there. I thought that was really sweet to watch them.
Definitely. I just thought that the whole sequence was really great. And I think, like you said, very sweet and not what we usually see from them. So it was a nice sort of growth moment for their relationship.
Yeah. And that's not going to be the last time they both use their bending powers in this vignette.
Exactly. Yeah. So as they leave, like they're looking fly. They got some like heavy makeup on. And as they're walking around, like Toph is like kind of opening up a bit. She's like finally excited. And then they meet these like awful people who just decide to just be rude for no reason. They chose violence. And they're just like saying like, your makeup is bad. And they're not even that clever. Like, if they were funnier, it'd be like, okay, at least you're funny. But they're just like insulting her for no reason. And it's really unfortunate here that these like older earthbending ladies are just like making fun of literal children.
Yeah, they're just complete a-holes, honestly.
And they get what they deserve, you know?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So then they just decide to like open up, or Toph decides like open up the earth beneath them so that they like fall underneath because they're on this bridge. And it's like, oh, that's such poetic justice. And it comes so quickly. I thought that was hilarious.
And then Katara washes them away.
Yep. Yeah.
So the way that she washed away, you know, Toph's insecurities afterwards. She pushed it down the river with her insecurities.
Nice metaphor, Maggie. Look at that. We don't got haiku.
I did get an A in script analysis in college. So
okay. That's great. We should have you give us your thoughts more often because this is all great stuff.
True.
Yeah. And I think it's also really sweet here. Like Katara here has her moment where she's like really being sweet. And she says like, these people don't know what they're talking about. She's like, you're so strong and confident and self-assured. And then she says like, I know this doesn't matter, but you're really pretty. And Toph really like smiles, and it's a really sweet moment they have. And then of course we get a Toph blind joke, which I thought was funny as well. Cause Toph's like, I would return the compliment, but I have no idea what you look like.
I really love the way that, these female characters are written, because they leave space for them to be so multidimensional. And I love the fact that Katara, you know, instead of being like, you are so pretty, like, don't listen to them, like, led with all of the other amazing characteristics about Toph, because I know as a woman, and I always like much more appreciate compliments that have to do with my character over my appearance. And I love that it's like, that's where Katara went, because she is a woman and she would know that that is what matters most to Toph, especially someone who's blind, who like literally can't see what she looks like, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I thought this is like a very, very sweet moment here. And then someone pointed out in the chat, in the like post-show recaps Discord, I forget who said this, but they were saying that like so Toph can like tell when people are lying. She can like tell when people are tensing up. And so she knows that like Katara was telling her the truth when she said she was pretty, which wow. I like, it's like very sweet to know that like, yeah, like, you know, Toph could never have known this, but to hear it is nice. But like it is true. Like the compliment she gives is so good. It's not centered around like, you know, oh, like your eyes are so pretty or whatever. It's like you're strong, confident, self-assured.
And this is like, another example of Avatar just doing a very intelligent job with the way they write female characters. Because in a lot of other even animated sitcoms of this era, you don't get like touching moments like this with the female leads. It's usually focused on like the male action heroes, especially like a lot of the anime I was watching when I was younger. The females didn't get nearly as much play as the females in Avatar. So kudos to the writing team for writing up a scene like this.
Yeah, and I know that sure. At first glance, like you could be like, of course the girls go to the spa. But if you watch and really take in these characters and what it means to each of them, I think that they just did such a great job. And also, like, sometimes girls just want to go to the spa. And that is not shameful. That, like, females like to exhibit femininity and want to feel pretty. There is nothing shameful about that. These girls are completely badass, and they also want to feel pretty. Those things can absolutely coexist.
Yeah. Yeah. They've been saving the world like weekly. On a weekly basis, they save the world through like incredible feats of power. Like they get a spa day. Like they can do it. Yeah. But this one was very sweet. The next one that we get to is just like, it is sweet. I don't want to like, you know, say it's not. It's just so sad though. Like the tale of Iroh is like a tearjerker at best, if not like a full box of Kleenex as you're like just crying. This one gets me like every time. Like it starts with Iroh. He's going through a market. He's like buying a few things, and we just get to hit Iroh being himself. Like he's just like a happy old man walking down the town. And it's just so sweet to watch him interact with people. I just absolutely love this character.
Yeah, I co-sign everything you just said. Just seeing Iroh, like, fixing the moonflower. Oh, the moonflower likes partial shade. And then seeing it instantly bloom. Him interacting with the crying boy and singing Leaves from the Vine.
Well, I think that the moonflower is such a beautiful metaphor for both him and Zuko at this point in the story, that like they are in the shade, right? They're hidden from their real identity, like, and they're in the shade and they're thriving. They're able to like really live out and work through a lot of the traumas that they've both faced in their life. And it's the idea that sometimes flowers don't need sun and they need partial shade to sort of rebirth a bit.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great point. I think like here he's like able to understand. He's so in tune with like both himself and other people around him that he like is able to see other people's needs. And that's just so special. Like that every time I see Iroh, it reminds me of my grandfather, Honey, or that's what I call him. That's not his name. He's not named Honey, but it reminds me of Honey, who just like he can see what people need. And I think that like he can look at people, know what they're like dealing with, know what they're struggling with, and know how to make them bloom. And seeing this, like just seeing Iroh like care for people, like go out of his way to fix like the plant and like fix the, you know, or like make the child happy. Like he's just there to like make people happy. And this really reminds me of my grandfather. So I was like tearing up already at this point in the episode, but yeah, it was really sweet to see him just like know what is needed to be done.
I also think that it's like so lovely the way that he uses the song to cheer up the young child when clearly the song is like a source of great pain for him, mm-hmm. As he's singing it, you know, at the end of his vignette. And I think that it's really just a great example of how you can help others with like the pain that you've been through, you know, and the traumas that you've experienced.
Yeah. It's really surprising that he can sing that song without crying, because like that song, it like the lyrics are just so emotional. And like, because like we know what happens with the son, like, yeah, for him to go and care for his child is like very, yeah, just, it means a lot, I'm sure, to that kid. And then he gets thanked by like his beard getting pulled, which is, yeah, just,
I forgot about that. He just pulls his beard.
That's the exact thing that a child does. They're like, oh, also, thanks, I'm happy now. And
isn't that the metaphor for like Zuko, right? He like spends his whole entire series like trying to help Prince Zuko. And then obviously we're not at season 3 yet, but you know, we get there and there's just a lot of, I don't know. I feel like Iroh is the type of character that just gives completely unselfishly. And I think that this whole vignette is a beautiful example of that.
Yeah,
it's just a beautiful showcase of Iroh expressing just like absolute gratitude to everything around him. And yeah, he's such a just beautiful individual, and that's why he's one of my favorite characters in the show, if not my favorite character. I always waffle between him, Toph, and Azula. I never know who to put number one personally. Yeah,
really? Those are the three?
Yeah, is that a weird three? I don't know. Is that bad?
Wow. Well,
they're very different.
Yeah,
I don't think that those would be my three at all.
Yeah, everyone's got a different three, but
I mean, I think it's Katara, Sokka, and probably Iroh. But I love Mei too. I think that she is so great.
You're speaking Jacob's language now.
I mean, but like I said, I am like the Katara lover. I'm the Katara apologist. Like I am personally Katara, so I think that that's part of it for me.
I mean, Katara's probably like top five for me, so I don't know. I'm high up on Katara too. What about you, Jacob? What's your top three? I don't know if we've talked about this.
I think Zuko has to be up there just because of like the character arc. I think Azula's like one of the best villains. And then I think on this rewatch, it might be Katara actually. But
really?
I think like before, I probably would have said it Iroh.
Poor Aang.
I know. Yeah.
Poor Aang.
I love Aang. I do. But of course, he's not in anybody's top three.
No, probably not. But that doesn't mean he's not a good character. He's just like...
Yeah, totally.
He's just
a baby.
You know,
A child. A literal child. Yeah. He's 11.
It's also tough to relate to Aang to somebody who has like all the pressures of the world on their shoulders. I find like I never really relate to protagonists in a lot of these things myself. But Aang is an excellent protagonist.
Yeah, he's also just so much better than me as a human that it's like hard to be like, oh yeah, Aang is great, because it's just like Aang's just like, yeah.
Yeah, like I said before, enlightenment. Like I can't connect with his journey to enlightenment. Like I'm not going to meditate, you know?
Yeah. But when Sokka wants food, yeah, maybe you could be as good as Aang, and yeah, it's just, it sounds hard. It sounds difficult. after he sings to this boy, we get a funny, like we get a nice, like, show of earthbending ball or earth ball. And then this is like very funny, as so they're like playing this game. It's like kind of like soccer, but they use earth to like move the ball around a lot more, which must mean that you don't have to be in great shape to play. But then like as the ball is like going around, it like it slings through the window and like breaks in through like some sort of shop. And at first Iroh is like telling him like that, oh, you need to like admit your mistakes. But then this guy is like huge. I think he would make any of the like Pipsqueak or like any of the big people in
the
Earth
Boom Boom Man.
Yeah.
He's this like the Boom Boom Man size.
And he's like, he's threatening these kids. And he says, like, when I'm through with you, the window won't be the only thing that's broken. And Ira's like, all right, well, I guess we're running instead of admitting our mistakes, which is hilarious.
I didn't realize what you were saying with the earthbending ball. You don't need to be in shape to play it. That's great. Perfect game for me.
I was just thinking, like, with soccer, you have to run around all the time. But, like, if you're just earthbending, you can stand there. Like, you don't have to move at all.
Earthbending takes a lot out of you, though. Like, you have to be in shape to be a bender.
Yeah, this is one thing that has confused me a bit, is because, like, the earthbenders are always, like, built. Like, they have, like, all the muscle groups that I don't know. But, like, the other types of benders, like, airbenders are small. Firebenders, like, some of them are strong. But yeah, maybe you have to be strong to earthbend.
Yeah, I mean, because I think it depends on the medium that you're moving, right? Like air, obviously it's heavy, but it's not like a rock, you know? Yeah.
But what about Toph? She's not physically strong, yet she's the most powerful earthbender of them all.
She's also like 10.
Yeah. it doesn't make a ton of sense why, like, she can move so much rock, but I guess you have to be in shape, you know. I guess they're all athletes. I won't mess with the earthbending ball people too much. I apologize. I could have sworn that the line, and this was like probably not good for a kid's show, I could have sworn the line when they tear a hole through the window is the guy says, when I'm through with you kids, like, I'll tear you a new hole or something like that. Like, it was so vivid in my mind that when that wasn't the line, I was like, wait, what? Did I miss it? But it was not. And then upon further reflection, that would not go for a kid's show.
Yeah, I definitely don't think that would be in a kid's show. It's also just a weird line to put in there. I don't know.
I would have bet, like, I don't know, like $5 on it or something. Like, I was very sure about it. Anyway, we get to... Oh, sorry, go on.
No, I was just about to look further on. Like, yeah, then this is when Iroh runs into the mugger, correct?
Yes.
Yes. Okay, cool.
Yeah. Do you want to break down what happens here, Zach?
Sure. Iroh runs into this mugger, and then the mugger's like, yeah, give me all your money. And then he's got like this pigeon-toed stance where it looks like, so he's got his feet pointed inward, and it looks like a gentle breeze could knock this man over. So he's already he's like the least intimidating mugger ever. Then Iroh sort of helps the mugger, explains to him that he's not going to be beating anyone up unless he has a strong base. And then Iroh fixes his stance and subdues him. First, he subdues him instantly, and then he fixes his stance and shows him how to correct it. And then Iroh says he doesn't look like the criminal type, and then we cut to him and Iroh sipping tea and talking about potential job prospects for this downtrodden fellow.
Yeah, I mean, it's like the whole idea that when he says, like, you need a strong base, he's not just talking about planting his feet. You know, he needs to figure out what's going on internally and emotionally. And I think that that's Iroh's specialty. But I also just wanted to point out that the mugger keeps calling Iroh old man, like, over and over again. He's calling him old man. And I think that that's something in the series that happens a lot, that these people really underestimate Iroh and his abilities because of his age. And people are often, like, using old man as, like, a derogatory statement to him, as though it's, like, super insulting. When in fact, with Iroh's age comes experience and wisdom, and that's what makes him so unbelievably powerful, you know, as the series goes on.
Yeah. In season three, the guard always yells at him. He's like, oh, be quiet, old man. And like, Iroh really plays it up. Like, he acts crazy. Mm-hmm. He acts like he doesn't know what's going on. And like, he uses that persona. Like, he understands what people see in him, and he's able to flip those expectations. And that's how, like, he's able to use his experience, use his wisdom to know, like, oh, hey, now's the day to break out in the Day of Black Sun episode. So I think you're totally right. Like, we definitely see this with Uncle Iroh here. But like, I think that he might be the best life coach of all time. Like, here, like, if he's like an old man with experience, I think like he should like create an Instagram, like get people to pay him money. Like, Caitlin Herman better watch out. He's all over this.
True. I mean, Iroh could just have an Instagram of just like fitness tips, because he gets pretty swole in season three. So I feel like that's always, you always see like old buff people going viral. So Iroh definitely will be thriving in the Instagram era of our time.
That is definitely true. Pat better watch out. He's coming for his fitness plan. That's
true.
Yeah. True. And then I think it's sweet here. He, like, I think this is something that he says to Toph earlier in the series when he's talking about how, like, the mugger is saying that people don't believe in him. And Ira says like, oh no, that can also be good. Like you have like so much that you can do. Like if you believe in yourself, like you can do so much more than people are expecting. And I think this is sweet. Like he really does have good advice. Like last week we were talking about how he just like has such good pointed wisdom. Again, we see it here. It really is so sweet.
Yeah, I mean, this is why Iroh's the GOAT. He just comes in, drops all these knowledge bombs on everybody.
Yep, yeah. Then we see Uncle Iroh. He goes up to a hill with a large tree. He starts setting things up. He gets like stuff from the basket out. And we see that this is Lutin's birthday. He's setting up a memorial for him. And this is the son that he lost whenever he was attacking Ba Sing Se. It's the reason why he left the war, and he just quit being the Dragon of the West and decided not to keep that path up. And then he plays that same song. And yeah,
it tearfully this time.
Yes. Yeah. Very tearfully. And the, this segment ends with a dedication to Mako, who's the voice actor, who also passed away. Passed away like near when this was airing, or like a few months before it was airing. So yeah. he finishes like most of the episodes in this season, but he passed away between production and airing, and he died from cancer. So it is really.
I had no idea. So the season 3 voice actor for Iroh is different.
Yeah, it's a white guy named Greg Baldwin is the voice actor for Mako.
Absolutely no idea.
Does a great job. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He does a really good job. He's basically doing like an impression of the real Iroh, mm-hmm. but it's very well done.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, but it's very sad, like seeing both these things come together, like Iroh's story, and then also knowing that like we lost such an incredibly talented actor. Like Iroh's voice acting is like part of what makes him so good. Is like he has that like jolly old man energy where you're just like you want to like him so much and you're drawn to listen to him. So yeah, this one's very sad.
Yeah, sad indeed. And then we get the lighter story. After that sad story, we get Aang going to the zoo. That's the next story up on the
docket. I have a question for you guys. Why do you think they put Iroh's story before Zuko's story? I think that if I had been arranging the episode, I would have flipped Iroh and Zuko's story, but also maybe then that would have been like two downers in a row at the end. But I think I would have wanted to put Zuko's story before Iroh's story because I would have wanted the emotional impact. Like, I think it's odd that we see Iroh again later in the episode as a part of Zuko's story, because I feel like this should have been his, you know, climax of the episode. No?
No, I agree with you. I actually, this is the first time watching this in a while, and I thought the Iroh episode, the Iroh vignette was one of the later ones, but I didn't realize it's the second on the docket. So, yeah, I don't know. I think I would have put it right before Zuko's, maybe. Before.
I kind of like that it comes early. Like, we see Iroh is trying to grow things. Like, he's trying to find ways to, like, improve the lives of others around him. Like, that's just his natural inclination. And so, for us to, like, see that story, understand, like, his loss and how he's constantly grieving. Like things that are in his daily life are reminding him that he's lost his son, Lutin. And, like, seeing that translate to him, like, wishing so much for Zuko, I think is sweet. The other way works well too. But I think like we get kind of an uplifting moment with Zuko. And so that's like better to go like an uplifting moment
into the Momo one.
Into the Momo one, as opposed to just having like Tale of Iroh and Tale of Momo, it's like
totally agree. It's like the biggest downer ever, and like 12-year-olds are weeping. Totally agree. I just thought like I think that I would have made sure that the Zuko one was earlier in the episode than the Iroh one, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think that makes good sense. Yeah. Cause this really should be like the moment for that, like the Fire Nation people that we know in Ba Sing Se. And then like we get Momo as well. I agree. Like maybe we could have had like Zuko and then like Iroh and then Sokka or something so that it doesn't just end like
yeah.
incredible downer. But yeah, now we're getting to like just a silly one. The Tale of Aang is essentially Zoo Tycoon. Did you ever play that game?
I've never played Zoo Tycoon, but that's a good description of this.
I know Zoo Tycoon. I played Roller Coaster Tycoon. I never played Zoo Tycoon.
Yeah. Well, it's the exact same game, but with a different skin. I was so excited when I found out that. So I played Roller Coaster Tycoon first. And when I found out there was Zoo Tycoon, I was so excited. And then I like played it and I was like, this is just the same thing. I was like the names are just different. Instead of like roller coaster, it's elephants. But yeah, essentially Aang is like getting his start level one Zoo Tycoon. So the episode's starting. He's like flying into Ba Sing Se. He's going to a zoo trying to find Appa. And as he sees all of these animals, he's seeing all of them in like extremely small cages. Like they're not able to eat. Yeah, I probably can't recap it too much further or the vegetarian in me will just get way too into it. But the animal rights here are just terrible. I mean, the PETA organization in Ba Sing Se is slacking. But yeah, the zookeeper says to Aang that there's no way to have a zoo because the Dai Li's not funding it anymore because the kids don't care. And that's surprising. Like, I think the kids would love to go to a zoo, especially like the kids in the lower ring. I feel like they would like to go. So yeah, I don't know. Do either of you like going to the zoo? Are you zoo people?
I haven't been to a zoo in years. I don't mind the zoo. I love watching like nature documentaries because I like seeing the animals free and in their natural habitat myself personally. Because then in a zoo, every time I go to a zoo, I just feel like they always have like elephants and stuff in such like enclosed spaces. So I don't know. I don't love the zoo.
The zoo is a great educational tool, which is the reason why I feel more okay with it. I need to perhaps get more educated on zoos before I give a formal stance on how I feel about them. But I go to the zoo like a decent amount. My parents got engaged at the zoo. So it's always like very, like if we want to like do like a family, like sentimental moment, we'll go to the zoo.
Okay. Mm-hmm. That's a good place to get engaged. It's like there's people around, but like you can have like your own special moment, like wherever it is. Yeah.
They went on their first date there. So they got engaged there.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I guess you have to pick your first date very carefully in case you have to get engaged there. Like imagine, you could go on a first date to somewhere that like you would not want to go back. Or if you went to like one of those traveling circuses, then like you have to just go to the parking lot that it was.
That's a rule for getting engaged. You have to get engaged where your first date was. You know, I think that was just my dad.
Okay, thank you for letting me know. I was like, I was nervous.
So
then they're going to the zoo. Like Aang is like, okay, well, I bet we could make a zoo because like the keeper like wants to have it. Like the zookeeper wants to have the animal, wants to have these animals where they ought to be in wide open spaces. And Aang's like, let's do it, which sounds great because normally when Aang takes on a problem, it just gets done because he's the avatar and he's able to just like quickly do things. But this is not so easy. Instead, he ends up having animals just absolutely terrorize the city. We see like hog monkeys destroying a shop. We have like these dragonfly things just like attacking people in the street. This is chaos.
The Rabaroos eating Cabbage Man's cabbages. Oh, yeah. It's absolute pandemonium up in the streets.
Well, okay. I actually have a question for you because I was going to say, I feel like Aang is like the king of biting off more than he can chew because he's able to be like, well, I'm Avatar. But in fact, like he's been in an iceberg and doesn't really know how to do a lot of things and has like essentially no formal training. And most of the reason that like things do get done quickly is because he usually has like a team of very skilled people around him helping him. I feel like this was like a perfect example of Aang biting off more than he can chew and like having it sort of crash and burn at the beginning before he can find his footing and figure out what the hell he's doing.
To his credit, though,
I swore.
I swear by accident like every episode. So
okay. Sorry, everybody.
No, but to Aang's credit here, he's not usually the best problem solver, like usually a Sokka for that or Katara, but he's able to actually wrangle all these animals. Like the big gust of wind that he takes in to blow into the whistle and draw all the animals towards him, I thought was pretty like quick thinking on his feet. So mm-hmm. I'll give Aang some credit here. His plan does work and he ends up corralling all the animals.
Yeah, he's not usually the person that's coming up with the ideas. So I do think, like, if this was the tale of Aang and Sokka, Sokka would have said, like, great, we're going to make a zoo. This is how we're going to get all the animals there. And it would have been, like, quite boring because, like, Sokka, I think, would have just come up with the right plan. I think Katara would have been like, no, we're not doing this until, like, we know it's actually going to work. Like, we're not going to let animals loose. But because it's, like, the tale of Aang alone, yeah, he does probably bite off a little more than he can chew. I think, like, He ultimately sets things right. Like, I don't think there's anyone mm-hmm. that he leaves not whole. Like, if he makes things worse, he usually makes them better. So, like, I kind of trust that he's going to do it. But, yeah, he comes with this great idea to have the bison whistle to blow it. And we see in, like, the next week's episode that Appa does hear this whistle. Like, Appa hears when he does this gigantic whistle that, like, Appa was nearby. But yeah, so then he almost does too well at this because we see like Ba Sing Se is a big city, but as he blows the burst of air, it goes through like the whole town. And we'll see like later as the animals are in that like a bunch of random like domestic cats, domestic dogs are also chilling in the playpen, which I thought was very funny as well. Yeah, we also see his air scooter here, which is great. The best mode of transportation. Number one reason to be an airbender.
Love me some air scooter. Yeah, you're right. You know what's weird? That they just have normal cats and dogs. It's not like the portmanteau animals. You know what I mean? It's just like bear from last week. So they'd have bear, cats, and dogs. I guess they just have normal versions of every animal. And then, but they're like rare.
Yeah. They also look like they had some sort of like cat-dog hybrid. It wasn't confirmed, like, but it does look like that's what they had. But it is always weird whenever they like, lose the like yeah they have like random like regular animals. I did notice there are some great other animals in here. Like we see the Rabiru that you mentioned, Zach. We also see a seal that has like a turtle shell.
Yeah,
I thought that was like very cute. Yeah, but he leads this like gigantic group of animals down. They're going towards the gate. The zookeeper's like, come on, we got to open this thing. And they're like, no, until they see a gigantic horde of animals going away. They open the gate and then they get into this like open area. Aang uses his earth bending on his air scooter to create a bunch of enclosures and you're left with a pretty cool zoo. I'm a little surprised that earthbenders can't just like make these all the time. Like it didn't seem like that long and he could just like other people could have made these sort of enclosures. I guess it's like lack of care, not lack of ability.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it is more lack of care. You're right.
Yeah. Well, we see these animals get the area they need. They have plenty of space, and including some of these cats. I have no idea how these like domestic animals are getting out of those playpens or the animal pens. I have no idea how that's.
I guess Aang must have to swoop down and collect them because who else can like have battle that danger? Because there was like
can he airbend them out?
Maybe because yeah. There was like that baboon lion hybrid or whatever, like looking down at the poor little kitty cat. Yeah, he's got to save it.
Yeah, I guess he could probably airbend it out. He could like probably just intimidate the animal, but I guess he's on firefighter duty, gonna be like saving cats from trees. He also caused it, so I guess it's not unreasonable. Next, we get the tale of Sokka. This is like a real silly one. This is like just right for Sokka's character to know that he's a god of the haikus. And I think this was the shortest one, but this is the one that like, I guess everyone was asking us about. Everyone wanted haikus.
Yeah, well, people wanted haikus out the wazoo.
I think this is like the perfect encapsulation of like Sokka's character at this moment because he's clearly extremely intelligent, extremely mm-hmm. goofy, and extremely horny. And it's just all thrown together for this great little vignette.
Yes, that is his character exactly. I'm glad he steers away from the sexism. Like he often just gets into sketchy territory where you're like, come on, did he really have to say that?
He has like the exact traits of most people with toxic masculinity, where like as a child their father left and was like, take care of the family. Like, he's had to be like the adult male figure in his family's life since he was like 9. So, yeah. You know, I do think that like Sokka goes on a beautiful journey in terms of that whole I don't know, just relationship with him and Katara, because like they, you know, had to mimic, like Katara became the mother and Sokka became the father when they were like literal babies, you know? So I think that, you know, I understand, and I think maybe give a bit more grace to Sokka in those moments, because it's just like, there's such a clear line that the writers and the showrunners have given us as to like why Sokka's behavior is the way it is.
His behavior does improve, though, as the series goes on. And
for
stuff.
Sure.
And especially Suki is a character that really helps Sokka in that regard, too.
Yeah. But so he's like walking along the street and he notices some women in a building. So he decides to like see what they're doing. And he goes into the 575 Society where they're going to be reciting haikus. He's like just watching, you know, like minding his own business until the Osher's horse, which was in the alley, decides to just give him a kick in the back, which like has like, if we thought that the random spa worker was going on the DL, like I think that Sokka's got to go on the injured reserves after getting kicked by a horse.
True. I was surprised he doesn't have a broken tailbone or something like that.
But he shakes it off. I guess he's got strong bones, because he goes into the room and all of the people in the room, like a bunch of ladies sitting around, just start laughing at him. And I think at first he accidentally makes a haiku. I believe that's how it's like read. Is that what your impression was as well?
Yeah.
So I guess he's just so talented. He's like a poet and he didn't even know it. He like creates a haiku where he's essentially just explaining how he got there. He says, "I'm so sorry. Something struck me in the rear. I just wound up here." And everyone's clapping. He loves it. Then we get the explanation. Then we get a bit of a poetry slam between the teacher and Sokka here. Any highlights from this encounter?
I like the paddle my canoe haiku, where he's just like slapping his keister. He's like, I call it easy. Like, I paddle my canoe, I'll paddle yours too. And it's
such a showboater.
True. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That had me chortling. So
yeah, he was good. He had a bit of a stage presence. I was very impressed.
Of course he does. We've been watching him. He is such a great, like, in another life, he would have been a comedian.
True. Would you watch his stand-up comedy? Like, if he was in a bar in Brooklyn, you'd go?
Totally. I'd totally go. I think he's very funny. I think he's, like, the type of funny I like, which is more goofy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, he's certainly goofy. He also brings props. I love that he, one of his lines is like, "I'm right back at you, like my," and then he, like, waits for it. He pulls his boomerang out, and he's like, "Boomerang!" Great. I think that that scene formed my comedy for a long time. Like, as a child, I thought it was so funny. But yeah, then he adds an incidental syllable. He could have ended it, or he could have shortened it something, but instead, no, he said one too many syllables, 6 in the last line. Everyone is upset. And I love how quickly the mood shifts. Like, I've never been in a place that's like telling, like, have comedy or anything like that, where some people are just like instantly turned off. They're like, "No, like, you're out of here." And we get this guard who's like, "Nope, you're kicked out." Zach, do you have an impression for us? I assume like this is like the pipsqueak voice.
That's one too many syllables there, bub. that's kind of the way he talks.
Exactly. Yeah. As soon as I heard this, I was like, I know people want to hear the haikus, but I want to hear Zach's impression of random guard.
Fair. Yeah. I wish Pipsqueak came to the city with Jed and them. So it's sadly, there's very few opportunities to bust that one out.
Yeah, yeah, you're a big Pipsqueak fan. I feel like this podcast is talking about Pipsqueak way more than we ought to.
True. Anyways, we'll continue on here. So, is this the story of Zuko now, right?
Mm-hmm.
I love this one.
Yeah, this one's really good. So we start off, and Zuko's telling Iroh, they're working at the tea shop, and Zuko's like, that girl at the corner table knows we're Fire Nation. She's been here a bunch. Which is, like, such a weird assumption for Zuko to make. Like,
well, I think it just goes to show that, like, Zuko, his mind is always on who is out to get him versus, like, who is showing him kindness.
Yes.
Like, that is just, you know, his trauma, his journey. Like, that was his first thought, is like, this girl is looking at me because she's out to get me. And how can I make sure that she doesn't get me before I get her?
Yeah. Yeah. No, you're right. And then luckily, Iroh quickly corrects him and is like, seems to me she has quite a little crush on you.
Yeah. Iroh is able to spot it so quickly because it's got to be so obvious. But Zuko's like spent his whole life either like a sheltered prince or on the run. Like, he's never gotten to sit down and relax and just be in a place where normal people do normal things. Mm-hmm. And then Jin walks up and she's like immediately there. She's like, she's so smooth and she's like very persistent. And I feel like if she wasn't as on top of things, that she would just not be able to convince Zuko to go out with her. And it's so great to see like Jin pull Zuko out of his shell a bit. Like, this is an ideal pairing. I absolutely am here for it.
Yeah, and Jin is so forthcoming too. Rarely do you see a girl ask out a guy in a television show. I feel like that doesn't happen that often in mainstream media, but here Jin, being the ever so confident person, is able to just ask out Zuko on the spot. It's funny, Iroh is like, yes, Zuko will go out on a date with you. It's Iroh who gives the confirmation and not Zuko, which was kind of funny.
I also like, okay, disclaimer here, I love Zuko. I think he's such a beautiful, beautifully written character. I think that his journey is so amazing. I love him. Going on a date with Zuko sounds like a punishment worse than, like, you know, tar and feathering. Like, I would have the most miserable time on this date. He gives one word answers. He literally like yells when somebody insinuates he's on a date with her. I just absolutely would be like, all right, I think I'm going to go home. Like, there's clearly some stuff here. You need to figure that out. I'm going to go. But this girl is, like, unfazed. She's like, sure, I guess I'll let him yell at the staff and yell at me and, like, be clearly super uninterested in talking to me. Whatever. Like, you guys are, like, ideal pairing. I'm like, this poor girl needs to get out of there. What are you getting her on this date?
I didn't say it's an ideal pairing, but I don't know.
I think from the Zuko side, this is as good as it gets. But, like, from, like, on Jin's perspective, like, he clearly lies to her. He's like very rude to the wait staff. Like, all of these red flags. Like, if someone's rude to the wait staff, it's like, nope, we have problems here. But like, she's just such a trooper. She's totally here for it. Cause yeah, he is just giving like one word answers. And I guess like they didn't DTR, like maybe like they hadn't put labels on it yet, but like he yells at the waiter for just saying like, would you and your girlfriend are like, what? It's so bad.
He yells at the waiter, and then she kisses him, and he's like, I have to go, and runs away. Like, what a terrible end to the date for her. Poor girl. Yeah. She put in all this time and effort, like, really was driving that convo on the date. And okay, look, I know it's so important for his growth. It's beautiful. We'll talk about that side of it. But honestly, from Jen's perspective, terrible night for her.
Yeah.
I would come home and be like, what the hell?
This is definitely a terrible date. She goes home, she like dishes to all of her friends. She's like, listen to this horror story of a date. This is definitely gonna make her top worst dates. It's also funny because like when they first meet, he has like his fancy hair and he's like all buttoned up, and she's like, she's trying to be nice about it and like mess with him a little bit, and he's just so mad. He's like, it took my uncle 10 minutes to do my hair. That's not even that long. Like,
but
10
his hair looked horrible when Iroh did his hair. That was like the worst haircut Zuko's ever had. Jin did him a favor by messing up his hair, in my
true opinion. That.
I also feel like Zuko is like the definition of like the like moody, like broody guy with a secret. who like a lot of girls are seemingly interested in, but then they're just sort of like mean to them. And I feel like this is like the exact, like, I just don't suffer that trope. Like, if anyone is trying to act mysterious, I'm like, you clearly, there's things, you'd go to therapy maybe, yes. You know, like, but like clearly Jen's into that type of guy. So I guess maybe she didn't leave being like, wow, maybe she was like, he's so mysterious, but I don't know. I would be like, yeah. Enough.
I think that at the end of the date, Jen should have been like, here's a reference to a therapist. I would love to hang out with you again once you have your issues.
That's what I would have done, you know? Yeah. That's what I would have done.
Yeah. Also, so this is like, this I thought was absurd is when Jen's like asking him like, oh, what did you do like in the circus? Because he's like lying. He said he was part of a traveling circus, which is why he was traveling so much. And he's like, oh, I juggled. She's like, great. I've always wanted to see people juggle. And then he like fails right on the spot.
Like this had me crack it up, honestly.
Mm-hmm. It's such a red flag. Like Jen ought to I hope she had a friend in the bar who was like watching to make sure that this was like not going to go south because that was just so bad.
But I love the circus. Oh, continue. I just want to say I love the circus music that starts playing while Zuko him just like failing and falling on his head. I don't know. I love the slapstick comedy, especially because you don't really get too many comedic beats with Zuko, really.
Yeah.
This is one of the most few and far between you get throughout the whole series.
Mm-hmm.
I think my favorite Zuko moment, this is like way ahead, but when he's like practicing to come up and he's like, hi. Like he's
Zuko, practicing. I was about to say that. That's my favorite one. Hi, Zuko here. Yes, I know exactly what you're talking about.
That is the comedic moment that I'm here
oh,
for.
Oh, absolutely. Defining a Zuko comedy right there.
It's so good. Oh, man. What a great moment. Yeah, but this was also very funny, but it's just so awkward. Yeah, have either of you had any like terrible first date stories like this? I hope none this bad, like for your sake.
No, I would probably leave if it was obvious that the guy was like just full on lying to me about everything. I would probably be like, maybe this isn't going to work out for us. But I also think like, okay, so now we talked about it from Jen's perspective. From Zuko's perspective, this is a very, you know, a huge growth moment. He's an incredibly closed off person. He's been through so much. Obviously, like I said, you know, everybody's out to get him. And this girl, just little by little throughout the course of the evening, is showing him that like she only has good intentions. Mm-hmm. And then Zuko, you know, gives a little bit of that back to her when she wanted to show him how beautiful the lights are and then they're out. And so he trusts her enough. You know, she's been able to build up his trust enough throughout the episode that he has her close her eyes and he shoots the fire. And I do think that that is really like a lovely moment for him. And, you know, she kisses him, which for him is obviously a bit too far given everything he's been through. But then at the end of the date, he still says that it was nice, which from Jen's perspective, I don't understand how Zuko could think that Jen had a nice time. But from Zuko's perspective, it was really, I think, a big moment for him to just be able to like enjoy himself, be a young guy on a date with a pretty girl and, you know, make her happy. I think that that is really, you know, new territory for him. So,
yeah.
I have a question for you guys. So do you think he struggled with the kiss because he still has lingering feelings with May and stuff?
I think it's just like, I think it's just too much intimacy.
Yeah. Like, yeah. And also go ahead, Jacob. Sorry.
He's just so like sheltered and closed off. Like he wants to have the control and know like, okay, this is like what I'm giving up. This is what I'm getting in return. Like so many of his interactions are that transactional where like he knows like, you know, I'm the prince. I have this authority or like at least that's what he tells himself. And like the other people are like, you know, on his ship or giving him things in return. Like even Iroh's serving like at his like leisure. It seems like a lot of what he wants is this sort of like I'm going to only give to you what I'm willing to give to you because I don't want to show that vulnerability. Cause like when he was vulnerable last time, he got a scar on his face. And I think that has scarred him in more ways than just his eye.
Oh, wow. That's
totally. And I also think like for him, you know, it's like the idea that when your basic needs aren't being met, like how can you ever possibly think about like going on a date with somebody or like being intimate with somebody. Mm-hmm. And for so long, like his basic needs literally weren't being met. He was you know, banished. He, you know, was in pain, like he, all of that. But also I think now he's finally at a point where like he's stable enough where he can go on a date, but like it's slow and steady. You know, you dip your toe into the water and you can't do too much at once because he is really trying to work through, you know, everything that he's been through and get his life together a little bit.
Yeah. No, you guys, man, you guys are on top of the game with your analysis, honestly. Holy, that A should have been an A+, Maggie.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just trying to keep up with Maggie's analysis here.
Do your podcasts usually go this long?
Yeah.
Okay, that makes me feel better. I was like, oh my God, I'm talking way too much.
No.
Over an hour here.
No, they usually go this long.
Okay, usually one of us will just get distracted and we'll start talking about something totally off topic.
Got it.
Very good job. I think we've stayed on topic. I think we're crushing it this time. But yeah, this is.
Yeah, there haven't been too many tangents about like crazy bus stories or anything like that.
The bus story was funny, Zach. You liked it.
No, I did. Like, I loved it. But like, yeah. I mean, that's what I mean. This episode right now, we don't have any tangents like that.
That is fair. Yeah, I think that the like trust that he gives to Jin is so sweet because he's been so paranoid ever since Iroh like heated his tea to turn it from like colder water to hotter water. Like he's been so worried about being found out. Like even at the beginning of this vignette, he's just so scared. And to have that trust is really, really just so great to see that he was willing to give that and do something for someone else. Like this is what we see Iroh do all the time. Iroh does go out of his way to make people happy. And the fact that we see Iroh, like through Zuko right here, like this sort of giving back, this sort of like, I guess, trust without anything in return is very sweet. But then, she goes for the kiss and I guess he's not there with it. But then I think it's also so nice. So he goes back home. Iroh's like, how was your night? And then he like closes the door, slams it, and he opens up. He's like, it was nice. Like that was a good moment. I would love to have the tale of Jin and see it from her perspective, though.
True. That's also like the, you know, the sort of represents his inner struggle, right? Like he is trying to remain closed off. Like that's his first instinct is to go in and close the door. But then he opens the door a little bit to, you know, open up a little bit to his uncle, even if it was nice. You know, but he obviously is reverting back to what his first instinct is, what makes him feel safe. But the fact that he is allowing himself there to be any sort of other option for himself is really lovely.
Yeah, Zuko's growing here and we're going to see him continue to grow throughout the rest of season two. And in the beginning of season three, we're going to see him grow and shed some of the trauma that's been eating at him for a while.
Yeah, speaking of shedding, we get to the tale of Momo, which starts off with, Momo is like just remembering, I guess, like all of his times with Appa. It's really sad because, like, obviously Aang is upset that he doesn't have Appa there, but like Momo and Appa, like, have this cute connection. Like they're like little buddies. It's like the smallest little animal and the biggest animal, and they're like the best of friends, and it's just so sweet. But then we see that this is like a dream that Momo's thinking of, and like Appa's obviously not there. And this is sad that we see like Momo in distress. This whole vignette, like there's I think no words at all. Because the only words that we get are like weird gibberish. From Momo's perspective. But this tells such a good story.
It's like a silent film, right?
Yeah.
And I love that they ended it there because the scoring of it and we have to watch just these movements that are done by these animals too, you know? But you get the whole journey of it as though it is a silent film or just like a movement piece, you know? Mm-hmm. It's really great.
Yeah. So he like first goes, like Momo goes to the like bag. Then he, I think like sees some of this like white fur, like lying. So he tries to go follow.
Smells like Appa.
Yeah. And that's just so sweet. Like having that sensory memory of something that you miss, like to bring you back.
He wraps it around his little wrist.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's so sweet. Poor Momo. Like Momo does not get enough love. Yeah, we've been huge APA stands, Zach. I think we got to...
Yeah, true. We got to give Momo some love. But no, this is a great little vignette because then he sees a tree in a cloud that looks similar to APA in shape, but they're not APA. And then you just see him forlorn, head down, looking all sad. And then he gets these buff-looking cats. What are these, like baby jaguars? Like,
yeah, they look like baby jaguars to me.
Yeah, I didn't know.
They want to eat him.
Yeah, these baby jaguars run up on Momo, but then he gets away and falls into a street act with some monkeys, which he then inadvertently joins and is somehow able to balance two monkeys on his head at one point.
He just feels, Momo to me feels like such an extension of Aang. Yes. Like in a way, like Momo is like Aang's son. Yeah. You know, like if Appa is Aang's father, Momo is Aang's son. Like he just feels like, I was like, this is exactly what Aang would be doing if he was here in this moment. It's such like a lovely little, even use the same music sometimes.
Yeah, they do use it. They use the same, like
yeah, uh-huh. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah.
That little horn music means it's just like going to be a great little like small gag. I absolutely love that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but and also Momo's very talented, like picking up on the choreography immediately. Very impressive, very well trained animal.
Yeah, I don't know if he was freestyling or knew the choreography, but kudos to him, he fit right in until the jaguars crashed the party.
Yeah, yeah, and so then these buff cats decide to keep chasing Momo. Like Momo is like trying to get away, and one of them like gets onto him, and then like more are grabbing onto Momo. And I feel like, I feel like Momo here is like in real danger. Like I was very worried, like I don't know, that you would just like fall and crash and like hurt your wings, go on the injured reserve list again. But instead, like they're all like on the ground, and then as they're like trying to get away, a gigantic net comes, like one of those like gladiator type nets, comes and wraps all four of them, and they go off. I guess this is like the animal control equivalent in Ba Sing Se.
Yeah, but then they bring them to like a butcher shop. I was like, animal control does not bring these animals to a place where they're going to get murdered and eaten. Like, huh? I was like, oh, it's like the dog catcher, you know, from like Annie. That's where my brain goes. I'm like, oh, it's like the dog catcher coming to bring him to the pound. But like, no, I guess it's a butcher shop. What?
Yeah, I guess in Ba Sing Se, the Dai Li's got some deals with the butcher shops, and they just send all the stray animals directly to the butcher man.
And Momo is like legitimately not worth eating. Momo is like such a small animal. Like you're not getting anything. Let Momo go. Instead, like, give him that dumb dog moment from Annie. Like, let's hear him just, like, go for it.
Also, like, so they have him in, like, the little thing. And I was like, he's got thumbs. Why? Because I had forgotten what happened. I was like, he's got thumbs. Yeah. Why doesn't he just get out? And that is what he does once he realizes what's happening. He uses his opposable thumb.
Yep. Momo's like sitting in the cage for like a few seconds. And I love that like we see the thing from Momo's perspective. We've seen this before whenever they were like sick in season one in the storm, like Sokka and Katara trying to speak to Momo. But I love the like just absolute gibberish, because like we definitely like think of animals as like, oh, yeah, they understand everything. But Momo just has no clue what's going on. Momo just hears like these weird distorted looking things.
I love that too. Just Momo's lack of understanding the English language. Just the absolute nonsensical gibberish.
Yeah, and then Momo obviously is able to get free because Momo's like very clutch. Removes the little like latch or peg thing that's like holding the gate shut, and as it opens, begins to run away. Then Momo, who's like, has a choice to make. It's like one of those choices in a video game where it's like, do you choose a good path to get karma, or do you choose the bad path? And Momo, you know, sweet little animal, reached enlightenment because he's an airbender too, spiritually, decides to free the animals from the cage. And as like the people are going, they like as the people go back to see the different cages, they're just like completely gone. And Momo and the panthers, or what do we say they were? Jaguars. Okay. Baby in my jaguars. Notes here, I had panther. So
the same thing. Same sure. Thing, honestly.
All right.
It's anyway, very Aang of him, though, you know, to like these people who've been trying to murder him the whole time. Like the reason that they're there is because they were chasing him to kill him and eat him. He saves them from being eaten. You know, it's very Aang of him.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Aang definitely would like go back and save the person that's like trying
to. As Sokka screams, "Are you crazy?"
Exactly. And then these buff cats decide to pay Momo back, and like they lead Momo to a little patch where Appa has landed, and like Appa has a footprint in the ground, and we see like Momo laying in that little footprint made by Appa. So we know Appa's close, and I love how this like pushes forward the story. Like we've gotten so many vignettes that are great for the character development, but they don't necessarily like directly lead in, but here we have the story and it's through the animal that can't talk. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Which is definitely why it's last. It's through the whole silent vignette. I just think it's such creative and, you know, interesting storytelling. I really love it.
Mm-hmm. And the episode kind of ends on a somber note with Momo lying down in Appa's footprint, which is another thing we've been talking about, how the episodes don't always end happy. Sometimes they end on somber notes.
Which is what I love about it. It's, you know, sophisticated storytelling greater than a children's television show.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
And it's so funny because as a child, I would have said that every episode ended happy. Like, I did not pick up on this, but rewatching it, I'm like, oh, no, that's bad. And then the next episode, I'm like, oh, no, that's bad, too. And
yeah, half the episodes end with, like, the Fire Nation concocting some, like, huge plan of some sort.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, there you go. That is Tales of Ba Sing Se, all of the different vignettes here. A really great episode. Like even talking about it has just made me appreciate it so much more. Maggie, you've come with so much great insight.
Yeah. Holy Maggie, you're like a genius.
Thanks. I really love the show. I think it's wonderful. And, there's so much to dissect from it. I didn't go online. Like I'm sure I could have gone onto Reddit and like really, really read deep into it. What people think, because people all over the internet are smarter than me and do this in ways that I, like, you know, even like that Ta effect that she can tell when people are lying. I'm like, oh, I forgot about that. You know? But I do think that the storytelling here is very sophisticated in a way that, is very exciting to go back and rewatch from an adult perspective.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is like one of the episodes that just like is so great. There's so much interesting things in the text. So it's great that we had you on this one so that you could really elevate that for us. Now is our time that we're going to give some episode rankings. I think this one might be pretty easy. But just to give a brief recap, you can always write in avatar@postshowrecaps.com to give us your rankings. We rank every episode between 0 and 4 cabbages. We'll take my score, Zach's score, and Maggie's score, plus the listener score, average them all up to get the official Aang in their score. This one's not hard. Zach, do you want to start us off?
Yeah, this is a 4. This is one of the best episodes in the whole series. It's a 4 out of 4 cabbages, case closed, nothing else needs to be said, pretty much. It's every vignette hits differently. They're all amazing, well-composed, put together so perfectly, absolutely beautiful, impeccable storytelling on all fronts. Yeah, this is definitely a 4 out of 4 episode.
Maggie, do you agree?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's so different. Like they really took a risk with this one. Yes. And it was a swing and a home run in my opinion. And I obviously, you know, you can't do this with every episode in the series because the series wouldn't go anywhere. But when you have had such an action-packed first half of the season, to have something like this that really focuses on these characters and where we're going and where we're going to end up, I think was, you know, just really special. So yeah, 4 definitely.
Yep. I'm right there. It's a 4. Like even some of these like alone, I think are 4s, but together having the collection of all the people in Ba Sing Se, we have like the different groups. We have obviously Team Avatar. We have like the Fire Nation folks. Like these people all have their own stories and they all have their own lives. And we get to see like a slice of their life. That's not just like, what's the plot of the week? Like, what's the thing that's going to push them forward this week where they all interact? Instead, we get the part where they're just living their life because it's not always about this like sort of bigger plot. It's so beautiful. I love it. 4 out of 4. I think it's impossible for listeners to give a 4 to 4 because like one person could give a lower score, but they're pretty close to 3.86, leaving the episode at a 3.97.
Wow.
Easily the highest episode. I think this is taking its place where it ought to belong at the top.
Wow. That's wild. That's wild that that's the top episode.
I'm not surprised though, to be honest.
Above the season one finale part two.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that one.
Yeah. That is definitely a good episode, but I think this one, like, it's just so different. And I think that like, because it's so different, people remember it in a very fond way. And like, it really does great on a rewatch. So I think this is where this belongs. So I'm very happy about this. Now we're going to get to listener feedback. Rudy had a funny comment. Rudy, our Nebraska fan from last week, Zach, said, there are no fight scenes in Tales of Ba Sing Se, but how rocking is Zuko's lightning of the lamps precision firebending? Obviously, we're not going to rank this as a battle, but how badass was that?
That was pretty badass. Him instantly, like, he's able to shoot it every single one with pinpoint accuracy.
He's very talented.
Like 10 seconds. So, yeah, that was a great feat of firebending for sure.
Yeah, Maggie, the past few weeks we've been talking about an Avatar Olympics. I think we've found our archer. I think the Yu Yan archers plus Zuko, I think we found the face-off for the gold medal.
Can't wait to see it.
Yeah. We had a few people ask us to rank the segments. John asked us to rank the segments. Shawnee from the block wrote in a haiku, said, y'all sleeping on Sokka, but his haiku game is on, or his, sorry, I messed it up. Let me try again.
Let's rewind.
Yeah, I'm not as good at this as Sokka is. Y'all sleep on Sokka, but his haiku game is clean. Was this the worst bit? Which I think is a great way to ask if...
No, I don't think so.
No,
I don't think it's the worst one. I think Aang's probably was the least compelling to me. I could have done without it. Obviously, it is important for the storytelling later on in the season. But yeah. I felt like Sokka's at least placed above Aang's, in my opinion.
Yeah, I also think Aang's was the least compelling. I don't know. So you guys just want to rank them all right now? What would your rankings be?
I would do Iroh, Momo, Katara and Toph, Zuko, Sokka, Aang. That's my definitive ranking.
I'm pretty close with that ranking. I think the only thing I would switch, I think, would be the Toph and Katara and the Sokka, just because the Sokka, well, I think it's only because I was a kid and I like laughed so hard at this. But for sentimental reasons, I'm going to go with
Sokka. The Sokka one is iconic. Like, that's when you think back, you're like, I was like, oh, this is the one where Sokka does the thing with the girls. Like, it is iconic in a way that the Katara and Toph one isn't. So I'm okay with that.
Zach, do you disagree with us anywhere?
No, I think you guys, I think I have almost the exact same list as Maggie's. I got Iroh, Momo. Then I'm going to go Zuko, Katara, Toph, Sokka, Aang. That's my list.
Yeah. Yeah. And the Aang one is bad, but like you really have to have, or it's not bad.
No,
it's just not as good as the other ones in particular. Mm-hmm. Like there's some albums I like where I like every single song, but then some songs are like a little less than the standout songs on the album. So
for sure.
Yeah.
That's very fair. Audrey here asked, former guest Audrey asked, which is the saddest of the tales and why is it Momo's? If you had to rank Momo versus Iroh, which one would you say is sadder? Actually, John asked, is Iroh memorializing his son the saddest moment in cartoon history? So one of them has to be wrong. You can decide.
Yeah, I think, who was it that said, is the Momo, was that Audrey?
Yep.
Yeah, Audrey, I don't know about that. I think Iroh's is still a little sadder, personally.
Yeah.
Just him crying tearfully over the son he lost at his like shrine that he put up, singing like Sweet Little Soldier Boy, Come Marching Home. Like, that's too powerful, I think. So for me personally, that's more sadder than Momo's. But Momo's is also pretty sad. I mean, mourning the loss of his friend. So
yeah. Maggie, do you agree?
Yeah, I mean, Iroh's is really sad.
Yeah, I'm trying to think if there's anything that's like more heartbreaking in a cartoon. I think when like Pikachu leaves Ash in Pokemon, like that might be close, but like this is really sad, and the way they tell the story is so great. It's like it's almost like the beginning of Up, in that because it's so contained, it's like quite quite good at like telling the story.
Like packs the emotional impact punch.
Yes, yes, for sure. Yeah, we'll end it off with, we had some people write in some haikus for us. I'm going to read them just quickly. Maggie, I wrote yours. I'm sorry if it's bad. okay, Maggie recaps feeds. She co-hosts with Kirsten too, class of 2020 icon.
Oh my gosh, I love that.
Class of that. 2020 icon. Is that a haiku?
I think class of 2020
icon.
Yeah,
that's eight.
That's right. A lot.
Class of 2020 icon. Yeah, that's
I think
eight.
When I say 20, I say it as one syllable.
Okay.
Class of 2020. Like I'm not okay. I'm totally saying it wrong. That's my bad. Maggie, I will fix it and I will get it back to you.
All right.
What did you write for me? Did you write us?
I did not write it. Pat wrote this for you.
Oh, okay. Pat.
Yeah, I got Pat to write in. This is actually, I believe, well, I don't know. I don't know how haikus work. I'm so sorry. I'm so bad at this. But he wrote, "Cure to a bad day, restored by his soothing voice, the goat, pod host Zach."
Oh,
I think that's shucks. A haiku too.
Oh, shucks. Oh, thank you, Pat. Then
Felipe wrote one for me. He said, "Jacob likes to speak. He has all his baby teeth. His points are on fleek."
that one even rhymed.
There you go. Well, there you go. That is our Tales of Bossing Say recap. Maggie, thank you so much for joining us. This
thank
was
you
so
for having
fun.
Me.
Yeah, it thank you great. So much, Maggie. You had so much on point analysis and stuff. It was amazing.
Yeah.
Thanks. I had a great time. Love the show.
Where can people keep up with what you're doing?
Yeah, you can find me on Instagram at @mlmorgan_.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. You can always keep up with us. You can write in avatar@postshowrecaps.com or tweet at us @postshowrecaps, as well as you can leave us 5 stars. You can absolutely smash those 5 stars. Zach, what's the link for that?
Avatar/postshowrecaps. postshowrecaps.com/ATLA. postshowrecaps.com/ATLA. That's the link.
We'll get it eventually. We've done this.
I always forget it on the spot. I haven't written
that's all right. Zach, where can people keep up with you?
People can find me on Twitter @ZachMuhammad32.
Awesome. People can find me on Twitter @JKRedman. Thank you so much, and we'll see you again next week. Bye.
Peace out. Bye, everyone.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.